This season, get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. See all the action from every game with full game replays. You can also replay an entire game and catch all of the plays in just 45 minutes with condensed games. Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops.
You are Locked On Eagles, your daily Philadelphia Eagles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Eagles fans? Welcome into Wentz Wednesday right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast, your daily podcast on the Philadelphia Eagles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Louis DiBiase joining you on episode 3 this week alongside my co-host Gino Camilleri. Gino, I'm ready to talk about the draft. I'm ready for the offseason again, man. It's only been 2 weeks, but I woke up today. I work the overnights at the radio station. I wake up every day. I check the injury report. I check out what the coaches said during the press conferences, see what the overreactions are on Eagles Twitter for the day, as there are many every single day. And today we find out that wide receiver Jalen Reagor is going to be out for a while. He suffered a tear in his thumb. It's similar to what Drew Brees suffered last year that kept him out for 5 games as Teddy Bridgewater started in his place. And Gino, we're talking about Carson Wentz today. We're going to try to figure out what's been wrong with his performances the last 2 weeks, how he can bounce back. But then this news comes in and it's just demoralizing because, I mean, Gino, you can't build Jack this way. You can't build squat with all of these injuries. And for Wentz, like, for him to bounce back now, a lot of it's just got to rest on his shoulders. And for a guy, sometimes people don't want to force things. He might have to make plays when you lose, to me, already, as a rookie, 2 weeks in, one of your most reliable offensive targets. It's just the injuries won't stop. And honestly, like, I feel like everybody at this point is just dead inside about it. It's just, you throw your hands up in the air because now a young kid with no injury history has suffered a serious shoulder injury and thumb injury in a month. So it's like, whatever. At this point, it feels like it's just going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I tweeted out about a half hour ago, and it's gaining some traction. But currently injured for the Eagles, left tackle 1, left guard 1, right guard 1, wide receiver 2A/B,
right,
interior defensive lineman 1 in Fletcher Cox, also who has an oblique injury.
Right.
Your edge 3 in Vinnie Curry. Your safety 3 right now in Will Parks. And arguably 2 of the best 3 special teams players that you have on the team.
Is that at
Craig
least
James
a, is
and
that 11?
Rudy Ford, who also... Yeah, I mean, you have 11 huge injuries right
that's
there.
An entire
for
lineup,
the fourth
Gino.
Year
that's
in
an
a
entire,
row, man.
That's an entire lineup, and it's week 2. Like, this is a new... Like, they've always suffered injuries the past 3 years, but this is the first time I feel like it just hit them the minute the season started.
Yeah, we talk about continuity and how great it was that the Eagles have, like, a lot of their players back. They have the coaching staff back, but, man, it's tough when you're down this many offensive linemen and this many receivers just getting into a groove with them. And now Nate Herbig is moving from right guard to left guard, so now you are out the player that you were going to start the season with at left tackle, left guard, right guard, and you just got your right tackle back a week ago. So, I mean, it is difficult, but as always, we try to make the best of it, Lou. I think there's some opportunities for some other players like John Hightower, for example.
Yeah.
And as much as people hate him right now, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, right now, if he wants to stay on the roster, he has to prove his worth the next 5 weeks.
He's got to do something, man. Because Jeffries,
he really does. I mean, and I want to see him succeed. I want to see John Hightower succeed. But for real, we talked about the whole Sidney Jones and Rasul Douglas thing, like this being the season for them. I truly think this is the season for JJ because it's either do or die for him right now, and it's not looking great for him. But you have to, and you hope that these kids can step up in big moments and hopefully succeed. With you still have Deshaun out there, you still have the 2 good tight ends. Hopefully Elshon gets healthier sooner than later. You have Miles Sanders and those running backs in the backfield. Hopefully you can make it work, and I still think they can. But like you said, it's kind of demoralizing to just go out there in a different face every single day on the offensive line, and
you have to overcome a different obstacle every single game. I mean, it's
basically
different every time. So yeah, we talk about continuity, and me and you all offseason said the Eagles have the upper hand in the NFC East. There's 3 new head coaches. There's all this turnover, But you can't have continuity, even if you have the same players, when different guys are coming in and out of the lineup every single week. You're never going to find consistency that way. And at receiver now, it's tough, because as much as this is do or die for JJ, so far he has done literally absolutely nothing on the football field to make you feel like he can be relied on. And so you look at, I'm excited for John Hightower's opportunity, but look, I was a guy that wanted Alshon Jeffrey gone in March, and I'm glad he's still an option on this roster, because he's not going anywhere when he's healthy. They're going to need him on the football field, and this is a team that uses 12 personnel the majority of the time. Gino, I think it's I think I saw it was 68% over the first 2 weeks or something like
that. Really? I didn't see their splits.
It's way over 50% right now, and that's going to continue without Rager. It sucks, man. Rager caught that big bomb week one. He had some tough plays against LA. He was on pace, I know it's only 2 weeks, but he's on pace for 800 yards in the season, and now he's probably going to be out for at least a month. So we're going to get into in segment two and three, man. We're going to talk about Carson Wentz, but you got to feel bad for 11, because no matter what this team does over the 5 years of his career, because it's not like they haven't tried to surround him with weapons, right? They sign Alshon Jeffrey. They signed Torrey Smith. They signed Mike Wallace. They kept trying to get DeSean Jackson, and they draft Miles Sanders, and they trade for Golden Tate at the deadline. And literally, it feels like every single move they've tried to make outside of at tight end has not panned out. And Rager, not saying he's not going to pan out, he looked really good over 2 weeks, but this injury just sets that back. It's frustrating, because this year, Howie's like, all right, I'm not going to go for that old deep threat now. I'm going to draft a bunch of young, fast guys. Goodwin opts out after you trade for him, and now Rager's hurt. It's just, at this point, I don't know what to say about it. I don't know what to point to as the solution.
The Philadelphia Eagles are really the perfect embodiment of time as a flat circle, how everything kind of just comes full circle with this team. And once again, we're having that discussion that we literally talked about yesterday, that you can't tell me that Howie hasn't done enough to help that offense.
Right. What's he supposed to do? I mean, every strategy he takes, it ends in the same result.
Yeah, people said, oh, we want him to draft better. Goes out, drafts three wide receivers. Right. Two of them are freaking hurt right now. Yep. Like, what more do you want the guy to do? There is just this unfortunate bad omen.
Unfathomable bad omen.
It really is unfathomable to look at it in a stretch of 4 years now, Lou. Four years we're having the same discussion.
Even a year, you could say, all right, I could see it happening for a year, but to have it go on for 4 years with every single type of player and their injury history and their age suffer the same result for that long of a stretch, I don't know if any other team in any other sport has ever dealt with this. I mean, this is truly unique in the history of sports, I think.
Yeah, it's surely not one of the better records that you want to keep in the NFL. And seriously, I don't know what it is, man. If there's something in the water there in the NovaCare complex or
maybe we just sold our soul for a Super Bowl, man. Maybe that was
I mean, the devil went down to Philly for sure. But in the grand scheme of things, this is really like one of those points that I've mentioned about a lot on this show in the proactive versus reactivity factor of the NFL. I think three to four weeks, and right before that stretch of the trade deadline comes around, are going to be very telling for where this team is going to go. Because we had this conversation yesterday. What if they go out there and lay an absolute egg against Cincinnati?
Right.
Then you really have to bring into question, do we have the right pieces? And if not, you have to make that decision very soon, or you could be like, I mean, you and I saw it for the longest time here in Buffalo, a team that just constantly is a middle of the road 9-7 football team, which they have been the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I don't feel comfortable working in that territory, because if you want to compete against the good teams, you have to have that home field advantage in the playoffs. You have to be hosting playoff games. You can't be on the road 3 weeks trying to get to the Super Bowl.
And you can't struggle to get to that playoff. And that's the thing, Gino, like, you can't struggle to get to the playoffs every single year where you have to pull a rabbit out of the hat and win three or four straight. Yeah, exactly. It's just you empty the tank just to get there, and then by the time you get into the postseason, you're absolutely shot. You're just running on fumes. So, yeah, I'm with you. It's not – look, the injuries over the past 2 years and this year have been, I think, the main issue, because you've seen this team still – overcome that and get into the postseason the last 2 years. But I'm also not naive to say that that isn't the only issue with this football team. And so I'm with you. If they lay an egg against Joe Burrow next week in a winless Bengals team, that the Eagles should beat that team. And then you
I don't want a close game. I want them to go out there and prove that they can score and prove that they can shut down far inferior opponents, which
because
they should,
lose,
because
they
have played down to teams like they did to the Dolphins last year. Mm-hmm. If that happens again, Lou, heads need to turn in NovaCare.
Well, because look at the schedule after that too, man. I mean, they got San Francisco. I know they're dealing with injuries, but if you got Kyle Shanahan, who has a similar style to Sean McVay, mm-hmm. you saw what that offense did do Jim Schwartz and his unit, and then you've got Baltimore and Pittsburgh, and at the end of the year you've got this daunting stretch with the Saints, the Seahawks, the Cardinals. I mean, you got the Cowboys twice. You cannot afford to lose this game, so I'm with you. They're going to have to do some serious self-evaluation if they lose on Sunday. We'll get into the biggest piece that can help this team bounce back and overcome everything we're talking about, and that's number 11, Carson Wentz. He has not been a part of the solution. He's been a main part of the problem over the first 2 weeks of the season. Me and Gino will get into coming up next what's wrong with number 11, what does he have to do to bounce back with 14 games left here in the 2020 season. Louis DiBiase, Gino Camilleri joining you on the Locked On Eagles podcast. And guys, it's sponsored today by NFL Game Pass. This season, get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. You can catch every snap from every game with full game replays and see all the plays in just 45 minutes with the condensed games. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle all in one place. And NFL Game Pass is the only place you can replay every game all season long. You'll also learn from the league's best players with over 40 NFL game film session episodes. Go inside the game from a player's perspective as they break down the game's concepts and techniques. Learn from the best, like Deshaun Watson, Stephon Gilmore, Davante Adams, and many more. NFL Game Pass also provides access to the entire NFL Films archive. Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. All right, Eagles fans, welcome back into Wentz Wednesday right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Gino, look, before we get into what's been wrong with Carson over the 2 weeks, because we know he has been a bad quarterback to start the season, but to start the episode like we did last week, the overreactions after another abysmal performance, they've just gone up another 10 notches here. And to be honest, they've been embarrassing. And it's not just from fans and full stands, right? And the typical guys that hated Donovan McNabb. It's like prominent media members that, like, the number of articles I've seen this week that make these two games almost seem like a proof of what we've seen from Carson the last 4 years, like as if this is a justification for potentially moving on, as if that's a possibility in a year or two, is absolutely crazy. Could you imagine? I tweeted this yesterday. I saw Ruben Frank of NBC Philly write a story about comparing Wentz's struggles right now to Donovan McNabb's in 2003. And I thought to myself, could you imagine if Eagles Twitter was around back then?
Oh my gosh.
When McNabb started even worse than Carson right now?
No, I couldn't. And frankly, to me, it's embarrassing for a lot of prominent people, because same people that are writing stories about how he's like a winner and all this stuff are writing the same things, questioning if he takes on coaching. Right. I saw that today from a very prominent individual that has connections with the Eagles. I also saw that somebody compared him to Jameis Winston. And now it's getting to the point where you have a personal agenda against this kid. Because frankly, yeah. Lou, yeah, he's been playing bad football. But we have came to the shared reality that Carson Wentz is not a bad football player. He is a
good football player
doing bad things right now.
Yes.
And we have seen this time and time again in every single sport in the entire world of very good players playing very bad at their particular sport. I mean, Tiger Woods for 6 years couldn't play because of his back injuries, and then he comes back and wins a Masters. Like, come on, people. I mean, now it's getting to the point where people, like I said, have a personal agenda. You can't look at what Carson was in 2016 and look to him now and say he doesn't take on coaching. What he did in regards to his mechanics, what he did in regards to his leadership in the last 5 years, you are just being completely ignorant to everything that he has been. You can question his on-field play all you want, but when you start to question him as a person, which as a person, he is who you want as a quarterback and leading your franchise going forward. 100% without a doubt has taken criticism better than many other quarterbacks in the league, has just been pounded by the fan base.
He's gone through more than a quarterback of that level, Gino, in 5 years than anybody has ever, and not just like watching another quarterback take his team on Super Bowl runs, but to go through like everything you're talking about, the way this kid has matured and taken all that in stride when a lot of players would not have, it's incredible. Nobody has gone through in the first 5 years, adversity-wise, what he's gone through for a player of that level of talent.
That's what I'm saying, and I don't think it's fair to him at all. And like I keep saying, we have to come to the shared reality of who he is as a player. And I said that comparison to the Incredible Hulk. Like, I think that's a very close comparison with Carson Wentz, because when he's good, he's very good. But when he's bad, he's can really hurt your team in a very unfunctional manner.
Right.
All right, hang on 1 second.
I heard Carson. I think Carson heard his name, brother.
But at the same time, we are two individuals that look at the whole sample size when it comes to evaluating players. And what I saw moving from 2016 to 2017 was great. He still has room to grow. And I think a lot of quarterbacks grow every single year. And some have an up and down career like Carson has right now. And I don't believe seeing Kevin Cobb and Sam Bradford and Michael Vick and the first and second iteration of Nick Foles, I don't think I want to ever go down that road again. Even if Carson Wentz is a top 15 quarterback in the league for his career, I mean, that's better than what the Eagles have had. And yes, he has hurt this team in the last 2 weeks, but what he has done the last 4 years has helped this team drastically. They do not get to the Super Bowl if it's not for the first 13 weeks of Carson Wentz's play and getting them home field advantage throughout the playoffs. It's not for Carson Wentz in 2018 and 2019 to win some of those games that they did and to win that stretch 4-0 last year. It would be so ignorant of people to not look at that and say, man, this kid has talent. Just where is it right now?
Right.
What is he doing wrong? Because looking at the tape, I think there are some prominent people, and I think Mark Schofield and Ben Solak did great examples of looking at his mechanics and seeing some just individual areas which he could be better on. And, man, he is much better than so many other teams' options right now. And to think you're going to throw Jalen Hurts out there is crazy to me. He is such a raw player as it is, too. I just think getting Carson in the right headspace, getting him in the right play calling and the right play rhythm, getting him rolling outside of the pocket, there's some just little things that the team can do, that Carson can do, that the players around him can do. Being fourth in drops again this year so far, Lou, that's not helping him out
there
at all.
There was a ton last week. And, you know, this is the thing, Gino, is I agree with the criticism over the last 2 weeks. Carson Wentz has been terrible. He has the worst DVOA right now.
Warranted.
Yes, of 100%. Any quarterback. He leads all quarterbacks in turnovers. He has been a huge, if not the main reason you're losing these football games. Mm-hmm. But my issue is when they take this two-game sample size and try to use that as like the definition of what his career has been so far. And that, to me, is insane when you look at, you've won the NFC East in two of the last 3 years with Wentz as the starter. You would have won it three straight years in 2018 if your defense doesn't blow 2 fourth and longs against Tennessee and Carolina. Carson Wentz, instead of 6-7 that year, is a record because some people love to be lazy and use QB wins and losses. Well, if the defense doesn't blow those two plays against Mariota and Cam Newton, Carson Wentz is 8-5 in a lower year compared to his other seasons in 2018. And then again, like what you just talked about with last year, I'm not just going to ignore the majority of the sample size of when Carson Wentz has been a top tier quarterback. Again, there are significant issues with him right now. He is not playing like a good quarterback. That does not mean that he's not a good quarterback. This is a good player in a bad stretch. This is not like confirmation of who he is. And that is my problem with how a lot of the media, a lot of fans are handling this. And I get it. People are pissed off when everything else is going wrong. Injuries, bad play on defense, you know, drops, like you said, they're fourth in drops this year. They had a ton against the Rams last week. You want Carson Wentz to do what he did last year and say, I'm not going to be part of dragging down this team that's already being dragged down by a lot of factors. I'm going to elevate them because that's what Wentz is supposed to be. And I think he will get there, though, eventually, Gino, this year. Let's get into some of the issues. I mean, you talked about it, and that was my biggest concern, too. And I thought, I agree, a lot of the guys are doing great at breaking down his mechanics the past 2 weeks. It was something even last year that I was kind of concerned about. It wasn't a reoccurring issue every single week, Gino, but I've seen issues. Maybe it's when he's pressing, maybe it's when he's trying to do more, because when he, I feel like, feels like he's backed in a corner, that's when I feel like the footwork gets sloppy. I think the throwing motion is a little elongated, right? It's a little too windy. And it's kind of an up and down process, and you're seeing the first 2 weeks, like, he just looks uncomfortable throwing the football. Even when he's rolling out, when the ball comes out of his hands, I'm like, I feel kind of uncomfortable, as if I'm not sure if that ball's going to get there. And you saw, you know, he missed some throws, even that screen pass to DeSean Jackson. If he hits DeSean in the numbers there, Jackson probably goes to the house for a big time touchdown. So mechanics is the number one issue that I think has been something he's always had to work on throughout his career. I thought it was a drastic improvement from 2016 to 2017. I thought it was good in 2018 as well. And then I don't know if it has to do with the coaches just aren't helping him out enough. It's not like something he hasn't been trying to fix. I mean, he went back to his mechanics coach throughout the offseason, but it is something that has been a significant issue the last 2 weeks. He's still throwing high, and it's causing a lot of accuracy issues.
So, yeah, I want everybody, if you haven't looked at it yet and you hear it first on the show, to go to Mark Schofield's Twitter. It's at MarkSchofield on Twitter. And he's one of the best when it comes down to breaking down quarterback play. Him and Michael Kist have the QB Sco show over at Bleeding Green Nation. He just does a very good job at breaking down the little intricacies that most people don't really see. And quite honestly, I didn't see this at first. But then once he said it, and then I went back and watched the tape, you could definitely see it as a trend in what Wentz does. And if you look at that interception, he is striding way too far. He's right. Overextending that front leg to a point where it's almost like hyperextending. And Mark Schofield does a great job at that. And he sent me this little article. It's in a quarterback mechanics book. And I want to read this little insert right here.
Yeah, go ahead.
And it says, too big a front step forces the upper torso to position its weight towards the back foot, causing a, quote, break of the body at the hips. So imagine your body at your hips. It now is not just one piece moving all together. It is two separate pieces. So you're now throwing with the upper part of your body rather than your legs. So this action either causes a release that is too high, thereby forcing the football to take off high, or a situation in which the football is pulled down, thereby causing substantial loss of torque and power and a low throw.
Right.
So basically, that is a lot of what I saw.
Yeah, it looks exactly like what the problem was, Gino. I mean, what you read right there is exactly what we've been seeing from him. And the problem, too, is like he doesn't need to put all of that into his. He has such a strong arm, and, you know, with his mechanics, he doesn't need to force it the way he is. And that's the big thing, is it's not just mechanics. I think obviously the turnovers are an issue, and, you know, they're holding on to football sometimes too long. But I feel like over the 5 years of his career, that those issues haven't really consistently happened week in and week out. I think the big thing is mechanics. And, you know, as that excerpt read, that was perfect. That causes the specific accuracy issue that he has a lot, and that is throwing the football too high.
Right. But at the same stroke of that, where you see these mechanical breakdowns, there are also some very good examples of him
for sure,
having
yeah.
solid mechanics, like those couple out route throws about 15 yard outs to DeSean Jackson. Those were perfect. He keeps his frame solid. He keeps his legs closer together. He doesn't overextend. He rolls his hips through. He follows through. He doesn't have that bounce back. Like, imagine when he's stepping off that front foot and it's so overextended, how basketball players like Kobe Bryant, like, they would fully extend that front leg to hit that bounce back shot. But at the same time, you're losing so much force because you are doing that, and you're working against yourself.
You're throwing against yourself.
Exactly.
Your own weight.
And that's what Wentz is doing. So imagine that. You're now taking time to do that action, which is taking a split second, and in the NFL, split seconds are all that matters.
Yep.
And there's that great picture of what Wentz saw at the time of release of that JJ throw, and he was open. But those little mechanical breakdowns, they add up.
It gave the corner just a half a second or a second more to get in front of JJ.
That's all it takes in the NFL. Yeah. And when somebody who Carson Wentz, we talk about those timing routes or where he excels, they're also kind of his breakdown at the same time, because if you can't get into a rhythm and your mechanics aren't there and you are throwing off the timing, which if you look back to 2016 when he used to do that dropping the ball motion, like that was big for him, mm-hmm. that cost him like 0.25 seconds each time he would throw it. I forgot the exact number, but I remember it was something very intricate like that. And now you're getting to that point where, yes, those little mechanical issues will come back to bite you. And he is pressing because he thinks his physical gifts, his arm talent being, he can overpower just those mechanical flaws, which
right.
you're not at North Dakota State anymore, Carson. Like, you have to get back to just playing NFL football, which we have seen him do, and do at a very high level.
Well, and Gino, it seems like his brain, like his mental processing is there on time. Like, his head right. is saying, throw that football when he should have to JJ.
But his body does something else.
Yeah, and his body is not moving with his head. It's delayed. And I agree. I think that's a problem. And I think I've noticed, too, that I think he's just thinking way too much right now. You can right. see the mental gears working. It was kind of similar to Miles Sanders at the beginning of the year last year. You could tell he was just thinking way too much about when to cut, when to just smash through the A-gap. And then when you're on the second level, do I try to fake this guy out? Do I try to just use my speed? And in the second half, you saw eventually it was just muscle memory. And with Carson Wentz right now, I don't know if it's because he feels like he forced the ball too much against Washington, that this week he was making a conceited effort to do the opposite. But it just felt like there was just too much thinking about picking and choosing when to be aggressive and when not to be. And of course, you have to find that balance. We've talked about it on the show the past 2 weeks. But at the same time, you want to find that balance through just straight muscle memory and through comfort and knowing when to do that. And right now, it just seems like Wentz is thinking so much after the snap that it's affecting him because he's just not going out there and being who he is. And so you got to find that balance, but you got to find that balance in the right way. You can't do it through the play.
For sure. And this is kind of reminding me of like that 2018 Carson when he came back and was just trying to overcompensate for that back injury. And he was just standing around. And a lot of the times, if Doug just moves him and he doesn't, because you see him back there and he just turns into a statue. I don't know why he does it. And he gets very flat footed. And that's when the mechanical issues start to come into play. Mm-hmm. Get him doing those sprint right options. Get him moving outside the pocket where even him throwing against his body, he still gets his body.
That's where he made his best throws last week against the Rams.
For sure. Yeah. Those backside routes that he loves to do. It's just, I think it's a collection of the coaching staff, a collection of overcompensating from an injury standpoint in regards to the players around him, overcompensating for his mechanics. I just think it's a lot of little intricacies that are coming together to make these little issues turn into huge issues, because it, in terms of extrapolating those two games worth of data out over Carson's career, you're also extrapolating what he's doing right now and what this coaching staff is doing. And if it lasts for a 16 game stretch, your team's in the dumpster. And like you're picking 1, 2, or 3 in the season, to be honest. But at the same time, I don't like to look at extrapolation. I like to look at hard data, and what I saw over 4 years far exceeds what I saw the last 2 weeks.
Yes.
Knowing that it isn't him just being a bad football player, it's just little mistakes that I know he can fix and I've seen him fix. And if this coaching staff holds him accountable and he holds himself accountable, which you talked about press conferences today, Lou, thought Carson had an excellent press conference for himself. Doug is a whole nother story. But,
yeah, that's why I was reacting. I was reacting to Doug's. I'm like,
yeah, but Carson, he said that he could be better himself, and he always says that. And that's the thing. Like, he never is out there blaming anybody else when everybody else is blaming him. And that's why I truly do think he is the leader that this team needs, and I expect him to turn it around, man. And this is the week that you want him. Like, you know that team, like, when you'd play NCAA 2K14 and you played FCS West, like, hopefully since he's our FCS West right now.
I hope so. Wentz Wednesday on Locked On Eagles, guys, today is brought to you by MyBookie. Invest in your intuition. Use the promo code LOCKEDON and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Your winning season begins today only at MyBookie. All right, Eagles fans, Louis DiBiase, Gino Camilleri wrapping up Wentz Wednesday, episode 3 of the 2020 season. I've really enjoyed this discussion, digging deep into Carson Wentz and his issues the past 2 weeks with turnovers, with just mental processing, especially with mechanics. Gino, I want to wrap up the show and talk about play calling and this Carson Wentz-Doug Peterson relationship. Obviously, the play calling has been wildly inconsistent. I will say, Carson does have a lot of say in that throughout the week and, you know, at the line of scrimmage. I want to ask you, are you, like, what do you think about this relationship with Doug and Carson? I always wonder if sometimes, because I think Doug's done his best work when he has to, right? With Nick Foles in 2017, where he's got to throw out his playbook and build up a whole new one. And in 2018, to get that team to bounce back at 6-7 with Nick Foles. I wonder if Doug, not that he's a, you know, him and Carson have a, you know, disagreements in philosophy and they have this rift. Like, I think they see eye to eye. I just wonder if maybe Doug gets complacent with Carson because in the play calling, because he knows how good Wentz is and his ability to produce outside of structure. I wonder maybe if, I don't know if that's an issue with Doug just maybe just relying more on Carson to do more for his offense than, you know, the game plan would need him to, or would need Doug to draw up. It's interesting. I just look at that relationship and right now I don't know what it is, but that's something I've always thought about.
Definitely is an intriguing thing to look at. And in terms of like success in this offense, 2017 obviously is Carson's best year, but they had an identity on that offense. You know, like they ran that RPO to a T. Like, that was their thing. Like, Carson could make quick decisions. He didn't have to hold onto the ball for so long and let plays develop. And they had success off of it. And I think Doug was comfortable in those play calls, and I think Carson was comfortable in that facet. And I think Doug started to believe more and more in Carson and kind of, we talked about overcompensation,
right?
Overcompensated to a degree to where, like you said, Carson operating out of structure, I let my quarterback go and do more. But sometimes a guy like Carson, those gunslingers, you have to reel him in a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes they try to do what he did on that JJ throw. Sometimes you have to bring him in a little bit. You have to find that balance, which we are talking about. And you look at it right now, he's second in the NFL in intended air yards with 801. Why? What has this offense done for him to just keep forcing it down the field when you can't even get him in a rhythm? Like, he can't even get into a rhythm making these throws that will set up the deep routes. They're just trying to force things right now, and I think that's why a lot of these interceptions have come, because you see it. They're towards the bottom of the league in motion. They're not making defense questioning things at all. It's just, can you beat your guy one-on-one? And if not, Carson's going to try to force the ball anyway. And that's not how this team should be operating. They should be getting their guys open like a Sean McVay does and putting their guys in a position to scheme them open. I mean, how many times are we scheming guys open in the last 2 weeks, Lou? Or even the last 2 years?
Sure.
I mean, yeah. Find me plays. Find me some examples. Like, they haven't been doing a great job of it like they did in 2017. I know you love Nelson Aguilar so much, and we'll look at him. Why he had so much success in 2017 was because he was schemed open all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, they were running those levels concepts. They were running, I mean, just those dagger concepts to a T, and those Yankee concepts, and just excelling at getting guys open. And now it's like nobody can win their matchups, and Carson is forcing a lot of things, and that doesn't mesh well, because Carson, a quarterback who trusts his arm a lot more than he should be at times, and an offense that operates to needle-sized accuracy with some of these passes, it's just a combination that doesn't mesh well, because you have to help Carson see these guys, get them open, but at the same time, don't put the onus all onto Carson Wentz, because it's just not a recipe for success.
Right. Yeah. You always talk about, and they always talk about, coaching Wentz out of some of those forced plays, even like the fumbles. Doug always says we got to continue to talk to him. I wonder, is Doug strong-willed enough to do that? I mean, because you know the kind of guy Peterson is. He's kind of an easygoing coach. Not that he's, you know, he lacks discipline or he doesn't hold his guys accountable, but, you know, I think why it works well with Howie and Doug. You heard that story Jeff McLean wrote over the summer about how, you know, firing Mike Groh and Carson Walsh was more on Lurie and Roseman. And it's why I think, you know, it worked, because Doug is not Chip Kelly. I remember when Howie Roseman fired Tom Gamble, there was that entire day of chaos where we all thought Chip Kelly was leaving. And so with Doug, he's not that kind of that, he's not a type A type of person. And so I think the relationship works. And I think with Carson, he's more like Howie Roseman, where he is that kind of guy. And there's times, though, Doug has to rein him in. And maybe it's not through screaming at him in the QB room, but right, like you're saying, maybe it's through scheming more plays for certain players and, you know, not just having a simple game plan where you let Carson improvise. Yeah, you want Wentz to do that a lot of the time. That's who he is. It's why you drafted him, and it's why you were going to take him over a Jared Goff. But again, there's a balance. There's times where you've got to rein him in. I used to have, a Brittany Spaniel, and that's a hunting dog, man. Like, you bring him into the, I used to let him swim in the woods, but he'll take off. Like, if it's right in his DNA, if you let that dog get in the water, the
Incredible Hulk, like, yes, it's the same thing.
Exactly. If he sees that rabbit, he's going to go chase it. There's times where he's got to be on a leash, and I don't want Carson Wentz always on a leash, but there has to be, like in 2017, there's got to be an RPO type of thing where you can consistently go back to, and you can have, you know, plays schemed in and not always have it just rest all on Carson's shoulders. You want Wentz to have that ability. You don't want him to have to do that, though, 100% of the time.
For sure. I mean, I think a big thing that we keep talking about for this season is balance, and I think that's huge, because when it comes to the NFL, success is at all three levels. Mm-hmm. Like, even though the special teams for this Eagles team has been playing very well, their offense and defense hasn't. So 67% of your team isn't operating to the degree that you want it to, and probably even more, you're going to have bad stretches. And we've seen that. We saw that in 2016 where they started out really hot and then just went down the drain. We saw it a little bit in 2017 towards the end of the season where, like that Christmas Day game against Oakland, like they were starting to struggle a little bit. 2018, 2019, we've seen it every single year. It's just, now can they answer again to adversity, which we've talked about multiple times. And I don't think there's a better team fit to overcome adversity than the Philadelphia Eagles, and that's the positives. We've seen Carson Wentz with lesser players around him go out there and create magic. We've seen Doug Peterson simplify his game plan and go out there. I haven't seen it from Jim Schwartz. I'll be interested to see how he does it. But still, I'm not giving up, man. It's only week two. You're one game out of the division. You have five division games left, two against Dallas. Those are the most important. But like we were talking about in 2018 with those games against 2019 was Detroit and Atlanta, right? Week two and
yes,
week three.
Yep.
In those games, we're like, okay, yeah, we got to have win two out of those three games, and we only ended up winning one. Like, we have to hope we win this one against the Bengals, because that rough stretch, it's coming very quick. And you want to be better down the road in November and December when you're playing those tough teams, but you have to get on track before the middle of the season hits, because you're not too far away from being right outside the playoffs looking in.
Well said, Gino, and we'll dive into that matchup with the Cincinnati Bengals tomorrow on Crossover Thursday with the guys over at Locked On Bengals. That's going to do it today, though, for Wentz Wednesday Episode 3 right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show on any platform or on LockedOnEagles.com, and make sure to follow me and Gino on Twitter. After the show, we're always talking birds at DiBiase LOE and at Gino_LOE. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in today. As always, thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. And let's go, Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.